about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Devin Olson, and he'll be answering your most important questions on tactical nymphing, Eurostyle. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Devin a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Devin Olson about tactical nymphing, Eurostyle. When you stay at Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize, you are only a step away from fly fishing for tarpon, permit, and bonefish. In fact, you may see permit tailing right off the deck of your cabana. At Tarpon Key Lodge, you fish the tides, not the clock, and that makes all the difference in the world. You can fish the lagoon for tarpon or the flats for permit and bonefish. It's your choice. Tarpon Key Lodge is located on a private island just 30 minutes from Placentia. You can fish with world-class guides like Charles Leslie Sr., or make it a do-it-yourself trip and take one of the kayaks out and spend the day alone. If you're looking for that grand slam, Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize is the place to go. Book your next adventure now. Visit www.tarponcay.com. That's TARPONCAYE.com. Before we introduce Devin, I'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So we have two chances for you to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Devin's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Devin's DVD, Modern Nymphing European Inspired Techniques. So here's how you'll, and after the show tonight, I'm sure you'll want to try to win this thing, so be prepared. What you got to do is be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question will be something that Devin and I talk about during the show. And just submit your answer along with your name and location on the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, take notes, and get that first answer in correctly, and maybe you'll win Devin's DVD. Our guest tonight is Devin Olson. Devin started fly fishing at age 9. He will never forget the first day where he caught a cutthroat on an ant in the first meadow of the famed Slough Creek in Yellowstone on a hand-me-down fiberglass 7-weight. Though he'd been fishing with hardware since he was a toddler, that day started an addiction to fly fishing that he can't seem to shake. When he fished against Lance Egan and Ryan Barnes in the former Outdoor Life Network's Fly Fishing Masters in 2004, he knew he had to find a way to compete in the sport that he loved. He fished in his first regional and made the team in 2006. The ensuing years have been more educational than he could have imagined, and he's as hopelessly obsessed with fly fishing today as he's ever been. The obsession has brought dedication, which has helped him to have competitive success domestically and abroad. The year 2016 marked his 8th consecutive berth as an angler for Fly Fishing Team USA, 36th Fifth Moosh World Fly Fishing Championships in Vail, Colorado. The year prior in Bosnia, he was incredibly fortunate to finish with the individual bronze medal, and even more fortunate to have been part of the squad that won the first team medal, a silver, for USA at World Fly Fishing Championship. In 2016, they followed that feat with the team bronze. Fly fishing competitions have exposed him to tactics and techniques from incredible teammates and fellow anglers from across the globe. Well, Devin, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks, Roger. It's really nice to be back.
Yeah. So for those on listening tonight, what happened was Devin basically didn't do a good enough job the last time, so this is a repeat performance. No, just kidding. He did such a spectacular job last night, last time, that we had so many questions that he agreed to do part two. And we still may not get through all the questions. but we'll have fun, and we'll learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. So.
And it's great to see the interest. So.
It's nice
to have the buzz out there.
Yeah, and it's everywhere you go, people are talking about it. And you can see people on the river doing it now. You look upstream and you can see. Oh yeah, that guy's euro nymphing. I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the look and the pose, It's
exactly.
Well, good. Well, let's just dive in here and try to cover as many of these as we can tonight. There were a couple of some of the people didn't listen to the first show, and just to be clear about that, there is a show. You'll find it in the archives. Same title. It just doesn't have part two on the end. And we did that,
back in February, I think, maybe?
February 1st or something like that. Yeah, and let me just double-check that for people. But February 1st. And go and check that one out. We covered rods in that. We covered line and equipment. Malcolm and Anthony, who asked some questions about that, please go back and listen to that show. We covered that thoroughly there. And there were a couple questions tonight on line and leader that we didn't cover. One here, Devin Van Brugger in Davis, California, says, how do you vary your leader construction when using a competition, in quotes, style fly? I guess he's referring to competition fishing is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what he means by that question specifically, but I can give you a quick little breakdown of a standard European nymphing leader really quickly, just so we can move on to all the presentation questions.
Sure.
And we cover this leader pretty thoroughly in the video, in the modern nymphing video that you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also find a YouTube section of that online on our filmmaker Gilbert Rowley's YouTube channel. He has an excerpt of all of our leader tying sections in the video that you can find there if you want to know more. Or you can just buy the video, obviously. But for my typical European nymphing leader, I start with 9 to 10 feet of Maxima Chameleon. And you can use either 20, 15-pound, or 12-pound test Maxima for that butt section. And I just use a level butt section specifically so it doesn't catch in my guides. And it goes out smoothly, and that long, thin, level butt section also really resists sag when you're fishing that leader away from you, and that sag is, just a drooping of the leader as it succumbs to gravity, and that sag will pull your flies out of the drift, horizontally, et cetera, and limit the distance you can fish away. So that's why the whole point of a European nymphing leader is this long, thin leader that you can fish further away, and with connection to your flies without that sag pulling them out of the drift. So anyway, start with 9 or 10 feet of butt section, then add 2.5 to 3 feet of a transition section. Right now I'm actually using 12-pound amnesia for that, and then add 18 inches of cider material. And most people will use a bicolor cider material. It's just monofilament that's dyed in alternating colors, usually orange and yellow or pink and yellow. And that's for visibility in different circumstances of light, but you can get other colors as well. To that cider, you can add a tippet ring directly, or you can just tie on your tippet. And then to my first fly, I might have anywhere between 2 and 5 or 6 feet of tippet, usually 4 to 7X, depending upon the conditions, typically 5 or 6 for most trout fishing. And then I'll add 2 feet or a little more than 2 feet with a triple surgeon's knot that I tie about 6 to 7 inches up that previous section of tippet. And by doing that, the waste material that's coming facing towards the end of the leader there then becomes my dropper tag. And then I've got extra tippet that I'll tie a second fly on down below. That's if I'm fishing a two-fly rig, but you can fish either, one, two, or three flies with this rig. But that's the basic formula for a European nymphing leader. I know we went through that quick, so there's plenty of references to that on Gilbert's YouTube channel in that section we did in the video itself, and I also write about it on the site on tacticalflyfisher.com.
Good. Another leader question, Dick in the Chicago area wanted to know about a formula for streamer leader that could be used for your own nymphing technique.
Dick, let me refer you directly to the post that I actually put up yesterday, specifically on streamer fishing with European nymphing leader. And in there, in one sentence, I talk about using my fin configuration, the fin model that I sell on the website. It even has a link to it there. And that's just the 20-pound version of the European nymphing leader I was talking about. And I use that thicker version specifically to have a little more oomph and power to turn over, heavier streamers, since most of the time I'm overweighting my streamers to get them to plunge to depth so I can then manipulate them in the drift through jigging or, moving the rod tip. So I want that slightly thicker version of the leader to be able to do that.
Okay, so where you find his blog, folks, is tacticalflyfisher.com. And right now, today, if you go to the blog at the top in its navigation, it'll be the first post there. So if you get this later, it's called The Benefits of Streamer Fishing on a Euro Nymphing Leader. So Devin Olson, May 2nd, 2017. So check it out. Again, Devin's site is tacticalflyfisher.com. So thanks for that, Devin. That's great. Okay,
yeah, no problem.
Let's jump into the presentation questions because we got just a load of them. Joe Herndon in Richmond, Texas asks, Devin, how much weight do you suggest when fishing 300 CFS versus 400 CFS, et cetera? Is he really asking the right question there?
I would rephrase the question a little bit because 300 CFS in one river is obviously not the same, discharge in another river based on the characteristics of the channel. So really, let's just talk about weighting in general. So, you can fish European styles of nymphing in anywhere from 6 to 10 inches of water all the way up to well over 10 feet of water. And it all just depends upon your tippet length and the number and the weight of flies that you have on the rig to be able to adjust for those situations. And then also the type of cast you make in order to get your flies to depth. So when I walk up to a river, let's say, and it's somewhere in the 2 to 4 foot range, a typical, range that a lot of people are going to fish for holding wise. If it's, a really slow current, I can probably fish that depth with a couple of size 16 flies that have just a 2.3 millimeter tungsten bead and a couple of wraps of lead wire behind it. If it's ripping current and it's moving really quickly, then I might have to bump one of those several tungsten bead sizes heavier. I might need to go up to like a 3.5 or 3.3 millimeter tungsten bead fly. But really, you just keep adjusting until you get the effect you want. So there's several questions later kind of on this topic, but what I do when I'm searching through weights, if I have a certain level of weight on my rig, a couple of flies, whatever tungsten bead size you're thinking of, if I feel like I'm not getting tight to my flies after about a third of the drift, and this is fishing a typical up and across presentation that most people would think of when they're European nymphing. So if I'm making an up and across presentation, casting quartering upstream, and if I haven't gotten tight about a third of the way into my drift or just when the flies are above me and across the stream, then I know I need to get a little bit heavier because the flow and the depth in that situation is such that I don't have enough weight in the flies to attain the tension I need to then get connection to my sider and show me a take. So then I'll up one of my flies a bead size, maybe two bead sizes if I know it's really drastic, the change I need to make. But I'll essentially just keep upping the bead size until I feel I get tight early enough in the drift. Then if I don't catch a fish or if I don't kick bottom somewhere in the latter third of the drift every couple of casts or so. Then I start changing my cast, and I'll go to a more vertical presentation first. If I've been fishing more of a horizontal cast where my leader turns all the way over and lands, you know, laid out on the water, and that whole tippet is exposed to the water, that's going to slow my sink rate. So if I then change to a tuck cast where I aim high, stop hard, and my flies are driven vertically down into the water, and my sighter, that colored portion of my leader, piled on top of it, then that gives my flies enough slack right at the beginning of the drift that they can attain depth quickly and get down. So then if I still am not getting deep enough after a first fly change and then a couple of casting changes, then I up again to the next weight size, and I kind of go through that progression again. So really the goal is you should be catching fish every couple of drifts, or you should be ticking bottom every few drifts in the latter half of your drift. But if you are ticking bottom in the first half of your drift, if it's a longer, typical up and across type drift, then you probably have too much weight and you need to lighten up, because it's just as bad to have too much weight as it is to have not enough, because it's going to mess with your drift characteristics and also just not let your flies continue their drift in a horizontal manner, kind of like a natural insect would. They should be drifting, you know, at the level of the trout instead of bombing down through the water or, you know, escaping up. So that's what you're trying to get when you think about weighting your flies and switching in between different weights. Get that drift where you're catching fish or ticking every once in a while.
And when you say feeling tight to your fly, so, I mean, my trying to feel that right now, is that an actual, feeling the weight of it on your rod?
No.
Or just being tight in the sense of your line is tight?
It's not a weight feel. These flies are nowhere near heavy enough that in most instances you're going to feel the specific weight under your rod. It's more a visual affirmation. So typically if your sighter has a big curve in it, then you're not fully tied to your flies. If it's ramrod straight, then you're probably leading your flies and maybe going a little faster than the current, and you've lost your dead drift. So you kind of want that happy in-between moment where you have just enough tension in the line that you can see by the shape of your leader being not quite fully tight, but not, you know, full arc shape. And you want that happy in-between moment, and that gives you enough connection to your flies that it'll signal a take on that sighter, but not so much that you're making your flies move faster than the current and affecting their drift in an unnatural manner.
Okay. I'm going to grab a question from much later on, just because I kind of think it fits in here with a question I have to ask is, you know, you're talking about continually changing out flies that are heavier weighted rather than adding some kind of weight to your rig. Steve in Northern California asked, if you're not bound by the rules of competition fly fishing, how would you change your tactics to catch more fish? So in competition, you can't add weight, right? You can only change flies?
Yeah, so all the weight has to be built into your flies. So simply, you know, the two major rules that most people refer to when they think of competition rules are, A, you can't fish split shot or indicators, and B, you can't have A and B. You can't fish split shot to add weight to your leaders, or you can't fish strike indicators, anything that'll float your leader that's attached to it. So essentially, if we're going to fish an indicator, we have to fish a floating dry fly, and if we're going to fish weight, we have to fish weighted flies. So that's why European styles of nymphing focus on having tungsten beads and, you know, weight built into the fly. But to answer Steve's question, I get asked that one a lot. And coming from the tailwater background I came from, with, you know, uber tiny flies ruling the day and split shot and indicator nymphing, I thought a lot about that over the years. And in certain circumstances with tailwaters, I might go back to having, you know, some really tiny midges and some split shot at times. But really, a lot of the times I can fish tailwaters just as well now as I ever did before, and a lot of times a lot better, simply because I'm now controlling the drifts of my flies and detecting strikes much better than I ever was when just purely fishing an indicator in a lot of water types. And there's some questions we'll get to in a little bit that we'll talk about maybe merging the two together as far as the hero nymphing and indicators or some sort of suspension type rig. But I really wouldn't change much, to be quite honest with you. When I retire from competition fishing, and or if the rug was pulled out from under me today, and I went and fished only just for fun anymore, I'd still fish the same way because it's just that much more effective than anything I was doing before. And you couldn't have convinced me of that 10 years ago when I started this. I would have told you were crazy because I was a dyed-in-the-wool, indicator fisherman, and I was good at fishing, really picky tailwaters. But that was the one trick pony that I was, because that situation was what that rig was geared for in, pools and slower laminar type water, and not for lots of water types and for lots of different insects that have variety in size and all sorts of things. And certainly in the years since, I've also found the power of attraction in flies and not just imitation as well. So overall, beadhead nymphs, tungsten beadhead nymphs, and euro nymphing has completely revolutionized everything I do. And if I wasn't competition fishing today, I'd still be fishing this way.
Is there a disadvantages to adding split shot or some kind of weight in a euro nymphing rig as opposed to using the weight of the flies?
Sure. Well, maybe we can jump to a couple of those drop shot questions.
Okay. We can get to those later then. Yeah, we can just jump there now. Talking about.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into that. So I get asked this question a lot too, because drop shot nymphing is certainly popularized by lots of other anglers, and that's totally fine. I'm not trying to, convince anybody to go away from what works for them or what they enjoy doing, but I would say, give some other things a try and if it works well for you. I got a question specifically about drop shot nymphing in an email the other day from a customer as well, and he laid out some of what he felt were the benefits of drop shot nymphing and specifically asked me for any drawbacks that I might see. So I pulled up this email, and I've got just kind of five bullet points here that I replied to him about. If you're fishing a typical drop shot rig, we're not talking here about your split shot above your flies. We're talking about your split shot at the end of your rig and then your flies up on tags above those split shot. So my first point is that with that rig, it's really difficult to fish in shallow water because you've got split shot at the end of your rig, and then you have these, two nymphs that are up above that split shot. And if you try and attain any sort of verticality with your rig at all, then your flies are likely going to be out of the surface or, in those surface currents, really kind of still where a trout's not going to rise through the column to eat them, even though it's shallow water, because there's so much difference between that bottom current and the top current, even in shallow water, that they're going to stay pretty glued to the bottom. And in those shallow areas, if your flies are up above your split shot aways on droppers, they're in that surface current, even if you're letting it get as deep as you can. And that's simply just an artifact of that way of rigging. Number two, unweighted flies tend to wrap around the leader and stay there because they don't have any mass or added mass of their own to help them unravel during the drift. So if they're on a dropper, and I tell people a lot of times to do this with to put small mage flies, even if they're tungsten beaded, I tell them to put it on the point or on the end of the leader for this same reason. But small or unweighted flies tend to wrap around the leader during drifts or casting, and they won't unravel on their own. So it ends up looking like you have two leaders attached to your fly and doesn't drift well, and also your 6X tippet just became 3X, so it looks funny and doesn't fish as well. Number three is I like to switch back and forth between dry dropper, two nymphs, and a single nymph rig based on the water type and the conditions that are in front of me and what that demands. It's tough to do with a drop shot rig, but it's actually really easy to do with a Euro Nymph rig. And I've written a post about a dry dropper rig before in Battling Wind. And there's other ways to configure it that we can talk about later as well if you want. But I'll switch back and forth between rigs all on 1 liter simply with a fly change or two. I can go from dry dropper to two nymphs to one nymph all by just switching one or two flies, and it works exceptionally well. I don't have that modular capability when I'm fishing, you know, split shot and a drop shot rig. Let's see. Number four, this is a really important one, especially if you're fishing complicated pocket water. That's a situation where I typically go to just a one-fly rig because you've got all these micro seams all over the place, knife edge seams where, you know, you deviate 1 or 2 inches either side, and you might not even have currents that are going the same direction because you have little micro eddies and stuff behind rocks. And even if they are going the same direction, they might be very different speeds. And it's difficult with a drop shot rig to fit your entire rig into a single pocket, a single seam, whatever, because as your cast lands, a lot of times your split shot is going to land in one seam, while your flies above are going to land in a different seam. Then they're going to end up fighting each other through the drift. So, again, it's that artifact of the drift. It's essentially like fishing a three-fly rig with your split shot being that third fly on the bottom. And a three-fly rig is the worst possible Euro nymphing rig that you can fish in really complicated water. It's the best for having a lot of weight, but not fitting it into complex water types where you have lots of currents battling each other.
Devin, and then, just to make a note on that, so basically what I hear you saying is that the split shot is in probably the most favored zone for fish because that's
exactly
going to be on the bottom in the slow area. And I want to make a comment about, you show a couple of times in your video, you've got a stick with some colored tape on it that show the difference of the current. And I thought that visually
Correct.
Was really impressive because, you know, like you were saying just a minute ago, too, that when he shows this in his video, he sticks this pole down and the tape is on there, and you can see how the tape is going faster at the top and a little slower down below until it gets the slowest at the bottom, and then when he puts it behind a rock, the bottom actually goes upriver rather than downriver. So you can see the back, you know, the back current going on there. So that kind of, that would, if you overlaid your dropper rig on that, you would see that the weight was where the fish are, basically. And
the weight is where the fish are, and your flies above, not only are they a ways distance-wise from the fish, but they're sitting in a totally different current speed. So your split shot are anchored in that slow current speed or that certain direction of current speed near the bottom, but your flies might be in a totally different speed or direction up top, and so they don't get as dead adrift that way. And my last point dovetails exactly with what you were saying. When fish are hard on the deck and they don't want to come up through the column, maybe the water's cold or they've been pressured or whatever, and they're just bellied up to the bottom and they don't want to come up. And, you know, that split shot may be down there, but those flies aren't. When you're Euro nymphing, you can, in that situation, you can put your heavy fly on your point, or you can put your heavy fly on the dropper instead of the point, and then that dropper fly that weighs more is going to bring the entire rig down in that zone near the bottom. So you've got two flies fishing in that boundary layer zone right near the bottom where the current is slowest and the fish are at. When you've got a drop shot rig, that's impossible to do because your weight's concentrated at the bottom and your flies are above. So that answers a few questions, hopefully, about adding weight into the leader.
Yeah, great. Okay, let's see what's up next. Don in California, he says, for check nymphing in pocket water, how often do you see the take on the sighter versus feel it? I am new to the method, and I've only ever connected with a fish by feel. Is seeing it more advanced, and does it come with experience?
There were several questions, I think, in the set here of whether, you know, you feel or see things. So a lot of the other people might have this their questions answered with this one as well. Really, Don's question all depends upon how you fish the angle of your leader. And it also depends upon the specific style of your nymphing leader that you use. And that's kind of a topic for an entirely different post or you know interview, but based on the thickness of the European nymphing leader you use, the thicker you have, the less feeling or connection to your flies you're going to have, and so you're less likely to feel takes. And the thinner you go, all the way down to you know a micro thin leader, the more connection. So in those cases, you would feel takes a little better. But the overarching answer to this question is all depends upon the angle that you drift your leader at. So if you get your rod fairly vertical over your flies, so your leader is nearly straight up and down, and your sider is nearly straight up and down, and your flies are as close to directly below your rod tip and your sider as you can get them, accounting for you know differences in current speed and the way that's going to affect your rig. Typically in that situation, you're not going to feel your takes. You're going to have the deadest drift possible because you're not affecting your flies horizontally or laterally, but you also aren't pulling on them in a way or leading them downstream a little faster in the current. So you're unlikely to feel the take in that situation, but you will see it on your sider pretty easily if you know how to spot it. Now, if you're fishing with your rod, you know, leading the flies downstream a little bit and your leader is at a shallower angle, you know, somewhere between a lot of people mentioned 45 degrees instead of the 90 where you'd have it if you're vertical. If you're fishing that leader angle, then you are a little bit tighter to your flies. You're pulling them along just a little bit faster in the current, and then you are going to feel the take a lot of times, if not before, at least simultaneously with a visible indication of take. So really, it just depends upon the angle. If you're feeling most of your takes, that probably means you're fishing a pretty shallow angle and you're pulling your flies maybe a little too fast. In that case, you may try leading them a little slower, getting a more vertical angle with your leader, which will not only give you a dead drift, but allow your flies to get deeper with less weight. And then you probably should be looking for indications of a take. And then, you know, it just depends upon whether you're actually spotting those indications. A lot of people, when I first teach them on a guide trip or something how to do this, it takes a while for them to learn to see takes. And many times it's a very small deviation in the, not even a full hesitation in the sider. It might even be just an angle change or something that slows down a little bit, looks a little funny. Sometimes it's a dead stop. It really depends upon the current and the way the fish takes. But it's easy to learn to spot with some training.
Yeah, I noticed in your video again, in some of the, you know, sections where you're catching fish, you can really see that sider move. I mean, it's very, very apparent in some situations. I think more so than what you would see probably because of the weight and the contact with the water than you would with an indicator. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Ryan in Central Pennsylvania, what are your thoughts about a trout's ability to see sider material? Whenever I'm in a shallow water situation, sometimes I'll grease up my sider and fish upstream, consciously trying not to line the fish, but inevitably the sider will sometimes sink and drift above a feeding fish. Do you believe that a bright sider material could turn fish off, spook them?
That's a great question, Ryan. And I'm trying to remember. I think it was all the way back in 2013. It was either 2013 or 2014 when I had my first iteration of the Tactical Fly Fisher Moon blog before I resurrected the site a couple of years ago. I wrote a post that was basically a review on white cider material that Cortland makes, and it was specifically for this situation. And I use that white stuff all the time, especially in competitions in later sessions or for really clear water. In fact, when we were in Bosnia in 2015, much of what we were fishing were really clear spring creeks, and I fished white cider the whole time specifically not to spook fish. So to answer your question, Ryan, yes, I do think in some situations, and especially with spooky fish and really clear water, fish can get sensitive to cider material. And certainly when I'm in a competition and, you know, four guys that are world-class anglers have fished the same piece of water before me, I try and get any edge I can, and a lot of them are using bicolor, so I usually go white and use a you know, something that is less bright and is less likely to spook them. And you can kind of combine that with that 12-pound amnesia section that I was talking about, because that amnesia is going to be held off the water a ways, even if you're floating the cider most of the time. So you can still see takes by watching that amnesia and the connection to your white cider, and then your white cider can be floating on the water and hopefully not spooking fish as much.
Good. Okay, let's take a quick break here, Devin, and when we come back, we'll dive more into presentation techniques for Euro-style nymphing. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as an unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft could be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I've ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kick floats, I'm convinced that the Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at their ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. That's BigSkyInflatables.com. So you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Devin Olson about tactical nymphing Euro-style. If you'd like to ask Devin a question, just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Devin, I always, you know, ask my guests what's going on in your fly fishing world, so tell us about some changes. You know, you're really kind of beefing up your website and adding new things to it. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, we've got a lot of I've got a lot of changes going on right now. So I actually just announced in my last blog post. So currently I'm a fisheries biologist as my day job, and I run the site on the side. But after the release of Modern Nymphing, the site has grown kind of far more than I can handle on a on the side basis. So I'm in June, I'm quitting my day job and taking the on-the-site full-time and then running it with an attached guide service out of the Utah area. So if you end up wanting a guide trip or anything on the Provo or the Weber along the Wasatch Front there, give me a shout and we can certainly set that up. But I'll be running the site full-time now and also focusing a little more on trying to get my book finished that I'm working on. It's due next January. So that's kind of those are the big changes in my fly fishing world right now. And other than that, I've just been trying to make sure I stay on the water as much as possible with a newborn in the house and a lot of rivers that have been uncooperative over the late winter and early spring.
Yeah. Now, what's the book about?
So the book, we'll have a little bit of this, well, a lot of it, but it's going to be called Tactical Fly Fishing with some sort of subtitle. And essentially, it's taking a lot or most of what I've learned over the last 11 years now of competition and studying, you know, the morphology of rivers and, you know, fisheries biology and everything else and kind of boiling it down into ways that you can up your fishing game. You know, it'll cover streamers, dry flies, all sorts of different ways to nymph and combinations of rigs, lessons from competitions, all sorts of stuff like that. But if I had to boil it down into one tenet, like a super pithy couple of sentence fragment, I would probably say that the message of the book is to let the water in front of you dictate the rig you fish, and don't let the rig you fish dictate the water that you fish. So, I guess I'll leave it at that.
Okay, good. Well, good to be looking forward to that. Do you have a publisher for that now?
Yeah, so I'm working with Stackpole Headwaters
Okay.
Books,
good.
Jay Nichols.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be time for another show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. And folks can get your DVD or access to the streaming version through your website as well?
Yeah, so if you go to tacticalflyfisher.com, if you go into the Fly Shop button, you can find Modern Nymphing, the DVD version, right there. It also, if you do that, there's a link within the description for the product to the Vimeo page where you can get the digital download as well. You can watch the trailer on Vimeo, too, if you just want to go check it out and make sure it's something you want to purchase. Go to Vimeo.com and search Modern Nymphing. It'll take you right there, and you can watch the trailer and buy the digital download.
Cool. All right. Well, let's dive back in here. We're not getting very far.
but
we are covering a lot of material, so hopefully, like you say, we'll cover some questions later on.
We're just into the second page, Roger, and it's 40 minutes in.
I know. Andrew asked about the actual positioning and movement of the rod with European technique in order to maintain the connection with the line as it travels in the water. He says, George Daniel mentions maintaining a J shape with the line in order to detect strikes, and others mention a 45-degree angle of the line out of the water and actually leading the flies, more check nymphing. So what is your opinion on that,
all
the above correct?
Yes, all the above can be correct, and really it depends upon the water type that you're in. If you want to get deeper and you want to do it with less weight and you're fishing slower water especially, then you should probably try and get a fairly vertical angle over your flies. It's because that vertical angle is going to give you the deadest drift and have your flies drifting as close to the speed of the current that they're in near the bottom as possible. Now, in certain situations, let's say you've moved from that slower, deeper water, that deep run that you've been trying to get down in, and maybe you even upped a couple of fly changes to heavier weights to be able to get down, but then you transition to the head of the run or even some pocket water above or a riffle that's coming in above, and you want to be able to fish that tiny little stretch maybe before you head to the next run that looks similar upstream, and you want to be able to do it without changing the fly, well, then you might go to fishing your rig lead a little bit with a shallower angle on that leader, because that shallower angle and that pulling you're doing downstream on the flies is going to lift them off the bottom a little bit. So in shallower water, and broken shallow water especially, where maybe the drift isn't quite as important because there's all sorts of currents that hide your presentation a little bit, or the lack of deadness of drift, then you can fish that rig lead a little bit faster, and it's not going to matter as much, and you might not have to change a fly that way. So all the above, I guess. Most of the time I would say, and if you watch the video, I preach that vertical angle probably more than anything else. But it's funny because if you were to talk to Lance, who's my teammate that did the video with me and is the other co-star, I guess, in the show, if you could call it something that conceited, he tends to favor a little bit shallower angle and flies that are lead a little bit more than I do. We've both had a lot of success, we both catch a lot of fish, so both worked. If you were to talk to me, I'd preach a vertical angle. If you were to talk to Lance, he'd preach a shallower angle. I would say try what works for you. Just try both. See if there's a style that tends to fit you better. You can probably get down deeper with a little bit less weight if you fish vertical, but you can compensate that depth with longer tippet and heavier flies a little bit if you fish with a lead drift where you're leading the flies a little bit more. So there's ways to compensate both ways. Mess around with what works for you. That's what I'd say.
Okay. Rick Meeks asked about, he's fishing tailwaters. Water depth is 1 to 3, maybe 4 feet deep. Not a lot of pocket water. Can your nymphing be used for that? I think we answered that earlier. Basically, you set up to 10 feet. Method's effective, right? But
absolutely. And
broken water being
easier. You can fish anything.
Yeah. Let's see. We answered the drop shop things.
Let's maybe get to, Roger, let's jump, because this will help answer Rick's question as well, because I think it also depends upon the water type that he has in that tailwater, which he says there's not a lot of pocket water, but there might still be moving water. I don't know based on his question, but there's a question or two down later whether I use an indicator or not when you're urinancing.
Okay.
Maybe we can kind of cover that really quick, and that'll answer some water type questions. So earlier I was talking about the versatility of having your uronymphing become a modular leader. And there's a few ways to do this. You can fish a typical nymphing rig where you just have your two flies and your uronymphing, typical uronymphing style. But let's say you get into on that tailwater that Rick is fishing, or there's also some questions from guys in Michigan talking about the off-sobble. This would be important for that situation as well. Anytime when you have flat water and you can't approach fish very well, especially if it gets deeper and you can't wade there very well either, and you might just have to get too close to the fish to scoop them with, you know, a typical uro-nymphing presentation. I can still fish that water very effectively with a uro leader, but you basically turn it into a hybrid indicator nymphing, you know, suspension nymphing leader, either through the use of a dry fly or through an indicator. So if it's fairly shallow water and I have that two-fly rig, it's really easy. I'll just take and I'll tie a buoyant dry fly onto my dropper where my upper nymph was. And I can grease that sider still so I can lift it off and mend it off the water if I need to. But I can fish that dry dropper at distance, maybe, you know, 25, 30 plus feet away, and hold my leader for the most part off the water, or just only have a little bit of it on the water. And then you can fish essentially a dry dropper or indicator rig in those flat waters, but you don't have to mend all the time. You know, whenever you're fishing an indicator rig, you got to constantly mend and mend and mend to keep your drift going. Because you have a really long, light leader that doesn't sag much, you can lift almost all of it off the water, and you don't have to mend, or you just can do the occasional mend because you've only got a foot or two of line on the water. Let's say it's a little bit deeper, and I need to then transition, you know, to a two-nymph rig under an indicator type situation. You can do one of a couple things. Again, you can use a hybrid leader system where instead of putting your tippet ring at the end of the sider, you can add another foot to 18 inches of like 3X or 4X tippet and then add your tippet ring on. On that tippet ring, you can add a 6-inch dropper where you can tie a dry fly on there, and then you can fish a dry and two droppers, you know, like the typical hopper, dropper, dropper rig that you might have heard of lots of other times. And what that connection section in between your sider and tippet ring will do is that gives you something you can hold off the water so your dry fly isn't connected to your sider. So fish can still come up and take your dry fly if you want, but it'll also serve the purpose of being, you know, a suspension device that's holding your nymphs up off the bottom, and you can fish it further away, just like an indicator rig. Now, let's say that you don't think fish are going to eat your dry fly, and you're not bound by competition rules. A really great solution that Dominic Sventoski over on troutbitten.com was talking about a few weeks back is using a Dorsey-style yarn indicator that you can pop on and off really quickly with a rubber band. And it's just a, you know, a yarn indicator that will slide on your leader, won't make any kinks in it. You don't have to constantly move the leader ends around to adjust it. So it's a great light application indicator that will suspend your nymphs at distance and not make any kinks in your leader, especially if you're fishing in the tippet section below your sider. So you can fish some of these, you know, lower gradient, picky tail waters, picky artificial sections like on the off-sobble, et cetera, and still fish a Euro rig, capitalize on the benefits of that really long leader that you don't have to mend nearly as much and that you can maximize the deadness of your drift. And then if you get into some pocket water or heavier water above that you want to clip that dry fly off or that take that indicator off, it's really easy to go straight back to Euro nymphing in a traditional way. And so it's a very versatile modular system. And so, yeah, you can use it on that tailwater that you're talking about in North Carolina, Rick, and just vary the way you rig the leader based on the water type you are in so that you approach fish without spooking them and still get a nice dead drift.
Okay, good. Yeah, it looks like we're covering a lot of people's questions, so you're doing a great job, Devin. All right. There was one, Paul in New York, he says, so maybe you can elaborate. I know you've talked to this a bit, but he talks about, this is page 3, Devin, in the middle, when using short tight line technique, I have a hard time detecting takes or getting my line tight when my flies first enter the water. I can combat this by using heavy anchor fly, but how do I fix this using lighter weight flies? I've tried tuck cast and elevating the rod tip once the flies hit the water, but I still feel like my flies aren't getting down initially. Also, any tips on detecting takes faster in pocket water when drifts are a couple seconds long?
Well, this is a really good question, and when I came over it earlier, I actually made a couple of comments just to remember some things to talk about. First, I actually wouldn't say that you're doing anything wrong, Paul. Regardless of the cast that you use, with really light flies, you're going to have you're going to need some distance to get your flies to depth at the beginning of your cast. So, the first thing I would think about is how far are you casting? If you have an intended lie that's directly across the stream, you know, perpendicular from you, like you typically do in an up and across type presentation, a lot of people, when they first start euro-nipping, they may only cast, you know, 5 or so feet above that and expect their flies to get down. When you're fishing really light flies with this technique, you may need to cast 10, 15, 20 feet even above that spot and get your flies to depth before you focus on getting your drift through that spot. That's one of the things I talk about in the video is, you know, casting ways above, giving your flies time to sink with slack in the leader to begin with. And then once they get tight above your intended lie, then you can lift your rod enough to attain tension and get that strike detection. If you still feel like you're not getting enough out of it, one thing that I've worked a lot on over the last little while is manipulating that tuck cast to add extra power. And one of the ways you can do this is by adding a single haul to your forward cast. So most people think of having a euro leader with, you know, 20 feet of leader and really light flies on there and think, why on earth would you want to haul? You're not, you know, shooting 20 feet of line this way. The truth is you can shoot a little bit of line extra when you haul, especially if you have a smooth connection between your leader and your fly line, like a super glue splice or a inline blood knot connection or something, so it goes through the guides. But in addition, you can wait until you fully feel the weight of those nymphs hit on that back cast behind you so you know you've got a full load, and then hit that front cast really hard with a haul and stop that rod hard on the front, and that's going to really drive your nymphs down. And you can manipulate the angle that you stop at to manipulate the angle of entry of the leader as well. So that's what I would say as far as getting flies to depths that are light. Cast further above and then mess around with adding some extra power through a haul to your tuck cast. And then the second part of this question there, we talked about detecting takes in faster pocket water when drifts are a couple seconds long. Obviously, this is the opposite situation, right? You don't have, you know, 30 feet of similar water that you can make a nice long drift in. You've got just a couple feet, and you're trying to get your flies down right away and detect takes. The first thing I would say is try a single fly in this situation. Anytime I'm in really technical pocket water, when I only have inches to a foot or two to drift, a single fly is almost always the best approach, unless you absolutely have to fish small flies, which you usually don't in pocket water. But a single fly is going to get you the absolute best strike detection because there's no other hinges, no other anything in the leader other than a direct connection from your sider to your single fly that's on the rig. So you can be extra accurate because you've only got one fly out there. But also, if you have two flies, then you run back a little bit into that drop shot situation that we were talking about earlier. If you're in really complicated currents and one fly lands in one current and the other lands in another current, then those flies fight each other. And you can have a little bit of a hinge in the leader and, you know, especially on that point fly, that fly on the end of your leader, if a fish takes that, you might have some slack in your rig that needs to come out before you detect a strike. So I would say My best tip for detecting takes in pocket water would be fish a single fly first. The other thing I would say is it's all about how you set up the beginning of your drift. So if you make a cast, and even if you tuck cast, whatever, into pocket water, if your rod continues downward at the beginning of your drift, you're going to add slack into that leader, and that's good for getting your fly down, but bad for retaining tension for strike detection. So in a situation where I have a short drift and I'm more worried about connection than I am getting deep with light flies, I'll fish a single bigger fly. Then I will stop my rod high on the cast, and instead of letting it sink to begin with, I'll actually, as the cast is turning over, I will begin to lift my rod just slightly a little bit to actually attain tension while that cast is in the air. So then in a pocket water stretch where I need tension and strike detection right away, as soon as my fly hits the water, I'm already connected and I've got strike detection. So that would be a couple of tips for some pocket water strike detection.
Okay, Devin, we've got a couple of follow-up questions from on the internet here. Dick asks, why Maxima Chameleon versus other Maxima material? That's the first part of his question.
Okay.
Go ahead. And,
I'll answer that really quickly. It's really easy. Two things. A Chameleon, out of all the Maxima materials, has been the stiffest material I've found. So I can fish a really thin European nymphing leader, but that stiffness will still transfer energy. So I can get lighter and lighter and lighter with the leader to avoid sag and, you know, defy that gravity with a, you know, but you've got a 20-foot leader a lot of times, and that butt section still needs to be able to transfer energy so you can cast well and accurately. So the stiffness of the Chameleon really works for that. The other thing is, if you take a spool of Ultra Green, typical Maxima that I would say you run into more often in a fly shop than Chameleon, you take that off the spool or off your reel, and you can stretch it all day, and it still seems to have memory. It's almost impossible to get all the coils out. But for whatever reason, Chameleon is the exact opposite. I can stretch that right at the beginning of the day, and it's laser straight. And if you have less memory in your leader, then you're going to have better connection to your flies and be more accurate. So Chameleon hits both of those properties for me.
Okay, and then the other part of his question was amnesia. He says he can't get amnesia locally in his fly shops. Where's a good source to get amnesia?
I sell amnesia on the site.
There you go.
I sell it. I sell it in the smaller diameters as well, because most fly shops carry it in like 25, 20, and 15, but I also carry it in 12, specifically for that transition section that I talk about in between the butt section and the cider.
Okay. Good. Another, Phil Cox says, I owe you a float down the green. Can you steal Euronymph out of a moving drift boat?
Yeah, I get asked this question a lot, too. I get asked this question a lot, too. You know, I need to, it's funny, one of the guys who asked this question, or who asked another question, his name is Charlie Card, and he's a really well-known guide on the green. I actually need to talk to him specifically about Euronymphing the green from a boat, because I haven't tried it there. However, in a lot of other rivers, I've tried it, and it's exceptionally effective. There's a couple of things that you need to consider, though, when you're doing it from a drift boat. First, don't try and learn Euronymphing from a drift boat, because you're going to get really frustrated. You got to have at least enough casting ability to be able to do it quickly and accurately, and you got to have some time wade fishing before that to build up those skills. Second, you need a river where you can approach the fish a little bit with the drift boat. So if it's a really glassy river and it's really clear and you get, you know, within 30 feet of the fish and they already start to spook, it's probably not a good situation to be Euronymphing from. But if you have a river that has a little bit of color or some broken water, anything that lets you approach the fish, absolutely, it's super deadly. I've had many days on the river where I was fishing an indicator rig or a dry dropper rig, and my boat partner decided to Euronymph, and he was outpacing me 3-1. And so I've given up on that and gone to straight Euronymphing out of the boat. That's originally how I learned that it was effective. It was getting my butt handed to me by my boat partner a few times. So, yeah, it works. The other thing you need to have is an oarsman who's willing to back row. It's not a typical boat fishing situation where you're casting out ahead of the boat and trying to catch up to your drift. A lot of times, maybe if you're pounding the banks or something at distance, you're trying to essentially make the boat act as if it's slowly wading downstream. And so you can cast back up, quartering upstream and fishing up and across type presentation the same way you would if you were wade fishing. So in order to make that happen, you need someone who's on the oars who can back row and slow you down enough that you can still kind of do these, you know, slowly walking down the river type presentation.
Okay. I think you kind of covered this, but maybe you can just clear it up. Don in California asked, it often seems to be the case that presentation matters more than pattern, so I'm wondering if a fly change for you is more about weight or dropper length to change drift compared to an actual change in size or shape or color to match the hatch.
Well, again, that's one of those the answer is yes questions. First and foremost, my changes are usually about weight. So that's the first thing. Just like if I was fishing a strike indicator and constantly, you know, fine-tuning my drift by adding and subtracting split shot, I would do the same with a fly. Although I, because of the versatility of being able to connect or correct the drift without an indicator you're tethered to, typically you're nymphing, you don't have to change your weights nearly as much as you would with a split shot, in my opinion anyway. But absolutely, I will change both for the shape, the color, the characteristics. I do fish a lot of very different flies. Like, I don't just fish imitative flies. I don't just fish impressionistic flies. I don't fish just attractor flies. I fish all of them, and I fish lots of different styles, and I switch between those a lot because even though I am a presentation over pattern type of guy, just like a lot of people, I mean, we're talking about the benefits of your own nymphing presentation here, right, and that it increases things for you catch rate-wise. But if all things considered, if then you've dialed in your presentation and you've dialed in your weight, there still can be differences in catch rate based on that fly pattern. There's been plenty of times when an off-the-ball type fly with a really weird color or a ton of flash or a tag nymph with a bright, you know, hot spot or something like that makes all the difference in the world and really jump starts the fish. So I certainly will change based on pattern, especially when I come back through a spot. So that's a lot of times when I'll change, especially to change pattern and not just weight. If I know that I'm fishing the right weight in a run or a pool that I feel like I can cover rest by fishing somewhere else and then come back to, a lot of times by coming back through with a different set of flies to refresh the fish, you can really, you know, catch some extra fish that way. And that's also something I talk about called the cleanup approach in the streamer post that I put up yesterday on the blog. So if you go read that streamer fishing on a Euro Nymphing Leader blog, that's a perfect example where the weight and the fly and the total presentation in general are totally different, but I'm still using the same leader. So, yes, Don.
Okay, yeah. A little break from the Euro Nymphing here. Daryl in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, wants to know what you'd recommend, I think, for him to get into competitive fly fishing. What's the route very quickly?
Sure. Well, the easiest way for most folks, it's a little bit more difficult where you're at, Daryl, although there's a pretty good hotbed of competitive anglers along the Front Range there. But if you go to flycomps.com, it's a site that a Coding Wiz member of Fly Fishing Team USA runs out of New York, Ken Crane. And he lists every kind of registered competition that is coming up on that site, and you can register for that tournament there, you know, pay your entry fee, the whole thing. It's all connected through one site. So anything that's Team USA related goes through that site as far as registration, and everything is announced there as far as future competitions as well. They also have a pretty big circuit on the East Coast of different regional teams that do their own tournaments that are also run through that site, but there's not a lot out west since there hasn't been nearly as much regionalization of teams and stuff out here. We're kind of spread out more as far as the competitive anglers in the west, but if you can start something local, you know, and a little circuit. You can absolutely run it through Fly Comps and talk to Ken and get some little mini tournaments on the weekend just for fun going. That's how a lot of it got started on the East Coast, and then it just blew up because of, you know, not only the learning but the camaraderie that people felt at these tournaments. So that's one way to do it. But really, just talk to competitive anglers, see what's coming up, and then check flycomps.com, and that's how you can get into it.
Right. Question from Bob Garman in Philadelphia. He says, do you approach a stream with a game plan? If so, is it different for a stream you're fishing for the first time?
Oh, man. This is a lot of what my book's going to be about. The thing is that, wow, we could have three more interviews on this one, I think. The first thing I want to know when I come to the stream is actually the water temperature. And based on that water temperature, my game plan will go a lot of different ways. Coming from a fisheries biologist background, I studied a lot of trout bioenergetics and their metabolic curves and stuff at different temperatures, et cetera. But really, I start looking at the water types that they might inhabit based on that water temperature, A, and then the level of insect activity, B. And based on those two factors, I'll decide what type of water to fish, or at least focus on. But let's say I'm coming to, you know, this happens every tournament I go to. Most of the time I've never fished the river before, or at least, you know, we may have practiced in the area for a day or two beforehand. But I'm headed to, you know, Slovakia for the World Championships in September this year, and there's four rivers there I'm going to fish that, you know, you can't even find anything about online, for one thing. And we're not going to see them at all until the practice periods, and then we're not fishing the exact same water that we will during the tournament. So in a half an hour, I got to make a game plan at the beginning of the session. So I think about that water temperature, but then I also think about the water type in front of me, and I think what part of that beat is going to be best as the session goes on, as insect activity, you know, increases or water temp, et cetera. As that water temp gets more up into those 50s, high 50s, low 60s range, fish are going to get into faster, shallower, heavier water, and that's not only more oxygenated but, you know, brings more food because they're metabolically, you know, on all cylinders at that point. But if it's cold, then they're probably going to be in some slower, deeper water and conserving energy. Man, there's so many variables we could talk about here. We could go on forever.
Sure.
But absolutely, I make a game plan. Yeah, I make a game plan.
Tell me about the temperature. Like right now, you know, we're going from here in Colorado to a sunny day to snow flurries like today.
Sure.
Again. And, you know, so things are still not warming up yet. What's a break point? To, you know, what temperatures tell you what part to fish and how? Maybe you could just speak to that.
Well, so a lot of it is also based on ambient temperature. So let's say the fish has experienced like an average temperature of like 43 degrees for the last, you know, couple of days, right? It's obviously going to be colder in the morning and warmer in the afternoon, but around that 43-degree mark. A lot of times the proteins in their body kind of get set in this conformational shape that forms around that temperature. And so they will really increase in activity if that break point hits 44, 45, 46, and a lot of the things in the stream will as well. A lot of times in that mid-40s range, all of a sudden you get a bait attach. So it's not just the temperature. It's often the combination of those factors. But if you're really cold this time of year, it may just be a single to 2 degrees that can bump them out of a stupor, you know, or in the winter it might be 37 and it bumps to 39 and all of a sudden they're on the feed pretty well. Now let's say it goes the opposite though and they've had a mean temperature for 43 degrees the last few days and then you get a hard snowstorm or a bunch of snow melt and the river goes down to 40, 39, 38, all of a sudden they're, you know, in the doldrums again and you better start seeking some deep, slow water and fishing some different methods that really slow your presentation down and maybe focus on some very bright, flashy, or junk-type patterns that get them to eat when they're really not on the feed.
Okay, good. Well, we'll save that then for next year when you're booking.
Yeah, that's a big topic that isn't necessarily directly connected to your own infant.
River Wilson in East Tennessee says, approximately what percentage of the time do you fish with your heaviest nymph on the dropper tag. I find myself using the point for my heavy fly most of the time, and I've noticed I catch most of all my fish on the point fly. I suspect that fish are sitting on the bottom much more than often than feeding in mid-column, so it makes more sense to fish your heaviest fly on the dropper, putting two flies in the zone where the fish lie most often. So comments on that?
Well, it's hard for me to put a percentage on this because I actually go back and forth on this question a lot. I like to try the swap a lot of times and see which fish is better. If you were to ask the same question to 10 competitive anglers, you might get, you know, five guys that go one way and five guys that go the other most of the time, or 6-4 or something like that. So there's a lot of different opinion on this. I will tell you that let me just kind of describe in this situation the differences between those two rigs and what will happen as a result. So if you do put your heavier fly on the point, on the end, that is going to, you know, anchor your rig in a straighter, linear fashion. So your heavier fly is going to be down below your lighter fly that's on the dropper above. And you are going to have the best direct connection to both flies on your rig that way. So your strike detection does come up a bit. But your dropper fly is, you know, higher in the column. So what I tend to use this, that configuration for is deeper water, where I, deeper, faster water, especially where I really need to focus on strike detection. But also, if you are in a pool or run during an emergence of insects and you think there might be some fish spread throughout the column and suspended, then it's wise to have a fly on a dropper up in the column. So it's a really good time to fish that point fly being your heavy fly. Now, let's say the opposite is true and you've got fish that are hard on the deck, either in some really fast water or, you know, there's not a lot of insect activity, et cetera, then I'll usually put my heavier fly on the dropper, and that'll bring both flies down near the bottom, or at least, you know, nearer to the bottom and in that fish's zone. Both of those flies will be in closer proximity to the fish, and you're more likely to get a take. You can also kind of do the bait and switch type of technique that way. If you're the kind of guy that likes to lead with an attractor to get the fish's attention and seal the deal with maybe a more imitative fly behind, that's how you would want to rig when you're in a thing. You'd want to put your, you know, your attractor fly, your flashier, bigger, whatever fly up on the dropper, and then your more imitative fly on the point, and they'll come, you know, more or less anyway, in the same part of the column that way, and they'll see that fish will see that brighter fly first, and the more imitative fly second.
Okay, here's an interesting question, Bob Kren in Flushing, Michigan. He says, I get more set in my ways and less willing to take chances physically or intellectually. This question comes to mind. What features of Euro nymphing in any or all of its flavors can I use to improve my garden variety nymphing and wet fly fishing, especially on the lower gradient streams of Michigan? Should I put fluorescent ciders on all my leaders, fish tungsten bead nymphs more, lead flies, put hot spots on my flies, what? So he'd like a little, I think that's an interesting question, you know, applying techniques to old school methods.
Well, as far as, you know, typical indicator nymphing, if you want to bridge the gap and go in between with some sort of hybrid rig, do what I was talking about earlier, you know, with an old garden variety nymphing style. If you take a typical indicator nymphing rig and you put a Euro leader on it, like I was talking about earlier, you all of a sudden don't have to mend. You have very little disturbance on the water, especially if you're fishing a Dorsey indicator that lands really soft. So you don't have a big splat from a thingamabobber, et cetera. You can start to see the benefits of that really long light leader where you can hold all of it off the water, and the weight of a fly line or a heavy butt section on a leader isn't dragging back towards you because of sag. So Euro nymphing leaders can benefit lots of other techniques, whether it be streamers, you know, fishing an indicator, a dry dropper, or just straight Euro nymphing. That leader taking that heavy fly line out of the equation can benefit all sorts of techniques and make them more effective. So try the leader first. Absolutely try some ciders. Cider really won't do you much good if you're just fishing a typical
rig because your leader is going to be in the water and you're not going to see it. Where the sighter helps is when you use it as some sort of indication in, of a take, or when you're raising and lowering that sighter to gauge your depth control. But if you want to try any sort of, you know, hybrid rig in between, absolutely put a sighter in it. Yes, fish tungsten bead nymphs more. Go back to what I said about, you know, drop shot nymphing versus tungsten beads, and try both. See what works better for you. Lead your flies. Like I said earlier, there's benefits to leading your flies and not with a vertical presentation. I tend to err away from leading flies from my, you know, more dead drift background and what I'm confident in. But having a direct connection to your flies and that reasoning behind the leading your flies certainly can help you fish better. Hot spots are definitely great. I put hot spots in a good deal, probably half or more of my flies. When they work, they really work, and most of the time they do. So lots of ways to improve your, you know, your garden variety fishing. Take little micro lessons out of what Europeans in general have done. I think in America, there hasn't been until recently a large competition scene here. Most of our fly fishing hasn't been driven competitively, technique-wise. The competition hasn't driven it. Competition hasn't driven the gear and everything else until recently, and we're just now starting to realize some of the benefits, in a wider audience in this country of what some of the Europeans have been doing for a long time. And there's always more to add. You know, we've got things to offer them, and they've got things to offer us. So I guess, in general, the less you can be tunnel visioned in your own little box, the better.
Okay, we got a couple more here, and then we're done. I think we're going to make it here. Don in Villis, North Carolina. Don wrote two long questions here. One of them is drop shot. We've already kind of covered that. But he's talking about strike zone speed. He says, one of Roger's guests, and he's speaking of Jason Randall, who we just had on, that the speed of the flow in the bottom strike zone is about one quarter of that at the top where the sighter indicator is. However, another Euro nymphing expert said that these speeds are roughly the same. I don't know who he's referring to there. And to lead the weighted bottom fly to keep up with the top speed. How does one determine these differences in vertical speeds and adjust on the fly? Or does the better feel of nibbles from more contact overcome more drag in a weighted fly?
Well, let's first address the first part of that question. The currents at the top are never the same as the bottom. So that's really an easy one to get out of the way. A lot of times the current is going to be much quicker at the top than the bottom, like Jason was talking about. And if you go read his Moving Waters book, where he talks all about different aspects of fluvial geomorphology, or basically, you know, channel function and currents, et cetera, there's a lot of good explanations that will help you understand more the complex currents that are in a river. So, but I've also seen instances where you have big upwells at the head of a pool or something where the bottom can actually be faster than the current at the top when you have a lot of turbulence. So it's never the same answer, but in general, you tend to have slower water near the bottom than the top, and the larger your substrate gets, the more interstitial spaces there are in between that substrate, and the slower it gets near the bottom relative to the top. So because of that, getting back to leading the fly or having a more vertical, you know, presentation with a deader drift, one of the reasons why I prefer to have that more vertical presentation when I need that depth and want a dead drift is that faster current at the top of the water is already providing you tension because it's pulling your rig down faster than those currents where the flies are at in the bottom of the river. So that sighter is, most time you have your sighter out of the water unless you need to drop it. But that tippet that's at the surface is already getting drugged downstream slightly faster than those nymphs at the bottom. So that's providing your strike detection already without you leading your flies faster downstream. So early on when I first learned Euro nymphing, I learned it that old style of Polish and Czech, you know, style with a really short leader, bomber heavy flies to compensate and flies that were led faster than the current. But with the addition of long, light leaders, sighters, and all that, I'm much more back to a visually based strike detection method now and getting my flies to be near dead drift or as near dead drift as possible. So that typically means getting a vertical presentation because you already have that lead fly from those faster surface currents at the top.
One more question, and we kind of covered this, but good question to end on because I know this is whether you're Euro nymphing or, you know, the older style nymphing technique, this is always the question that comes up. He says, Devin, I watched your video, and my question is, how do you know when you are deep enough? What gives you the signal that you are on the right feeding level? Are you feeling the point fly ticking along the bottom, getting hung up on the rocks? I've tried the method several times without success, and I just feel like I'm not getting down deep enough. Should I feel the tension, keep the tippet tight like I'm dragging the fly through the bottom?
This is one that's difficult to describe and a lot easier to show, but thanks for the question, David. Let's see. Like I was talking about earlier, most of the time, if I'm fishing a longer drift up and across, we'll say, casting above the target that's across from me, letting it sink for a while before I attain some attention and get that drift. I want to be ticking bottom not in that first half of the drift, always in the second half, and usually only once every few casts. But what you will see is a difference between the speed of the currents on the surface and the speed your rig is drifting at. So if you feel like your leader is going the exact speed of the current that you see on the surface, you probably do not have heavy enough flies because they're not getting down in that lower zone where the currents are slower. And those flies essentially then pull back on your leader and force your leader to go a little bit slower than those surface currents. So you should see bubbles or, you know, whatever, some indication going faster than your sighter. That helps you know you're in a lower zone of current and down near the bottom. Obviously, you should also be catching fish. So if you're not catching fish or not ticking bottom or your leader is not slowing down compared to the surface currents, then you probably need to add some weight. Beyond that, you don't want to be dragging bottom because trout are drift feeders most of the time. In certain, you know, narrow instances, they'll grub on the bottom, but most of the diet studies and the gut content, you know, that you could take from the stomach pump will show you that they're drift feeders and not bottom feeding. So you do want your flies in the drift, but you want them at their level. And so until you're catching fish, your rig's slowing down, or you're ticking bottom every once in a while, you should either add more weight or use those alterations to your cast with tuck casts or hauls on the tuck cast, et cetera, that I was talking about with to get your presentation more vertical and your flies to depth quicker.
Okay, great. Well, we've run out of time. But we did get through most of the questions, I think, maybe not individually, but collectively. And good job, Devin. You just rolled right through it. So,
well, I tried to combine as many questions as I could when they had similar threads. So.
Oh, yeah, that helped out a lot. That helped out a lot because I was going through as you were talking, checking them off, and I think we did a good job tonight. So stick around, folks, just for a couple more minutes. We're going to give away that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. And we'll also be giving away a copy of Devin's DVD, Modern Nymphing, European-Inspired Techniques. And I'm sure you'll all want a copy of that now. So if you don't win, you know where to go get it, tacticalflyfisher.com. Okay? So just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find our link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. So now it's time to give away a few prizes. Winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration base. If you didn't register already, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on chance to win these incredible prizes. Let me get organized here and get my database up and running, and then we'll find our winners. Let's see here. And the first thing we're going to give away is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. So run the database here and see what we get for a winner. And looks like we have Ralph Bosse, B-O-S-S-E. Ralph, congratulations on winning that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. Ralph is down in Arizona, so let me just make note of that. So he gets the one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, and if you want to find out more about the Federation of Fly Fishers, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org, a great organization to be part of. Great way to get your casting instruction certification from them, and they do a lot of work environmentally as well. So, second thing up is Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, one-year subscription to that. Thanks to Amato Books for getting us that. And let's see, our winner for that is... looks like Dick Dragowitz. I probably destroyed your name, Dick, but Dick has been putting in a lot of questions. Thanks for all your questions, Dick. We really appreciate that. So you get a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, so congratulations. Dick's in Illinois. So great. All right, so last thing, and our grand prize here is... Devin's DVD or streaming, whatever you want to do. He's happy to provide either one. And of his DVD, or his video, Modern Nymphing, European-Inspired Techniques. So the question that I need answered is, what is Devin's current job that he's quitting in June? What is Devin right now? What does he do? What's his title? Oh, we're just clicking, refreshing the queue here, Devin, waiting for a...
That's fine.
Yeah. I know you only mentioned this twice, so we'll see if anybody was paying attention here. Well, maybe that was too hard. I'm not getting any takers. Oh, here we get one. Do you know Phil Cox?
Yes, I do.
Well, Phil, and he doesn't already have your DVD. He just won, so he's got one now.
Well, all right.
So he's the one that was going to give you a ride down the green, right? So anyway.
Well, now we can talk about modern nymphing on the green while we're in the drift boat. How's that sound?
There you go. One of the requirements is he watched the DVD before he takes you out. Huh? So he knows... And maybe you have some rowing instructions in there, too. I can't remember.
There you go.
All right. So, Phil, do you have his contact information, Devin? Or
not off the top of my head. Have him send it to you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, Phil, send me your mailing address, an email. Well, I've got your email here, but send me your mailing or shipping address. You can do it in the same box. You just answered this question. You might have to refresh the screen to do that. Or you could send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. info@askaboutflyfishing.com. And we'll get that over to Devin. He'll get you that that DVD. And congrats on doing that and paying attention. And, Devin, again, thanks you so much for doing this a second round. But, you know, there's a lot to cover and a lot of interest. So thanks again for being here with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Roger, and I look forward to some future conversation about
Look forward to that book.
People are interested in too. Yeah.
Yeah, keep in touch with your progress on that. We'll all be interested, I'm sure. So, well, great.
All right, sounds good. I will.
Well, hopefully all of you have found our archive on our website. If you haven't, there are a couple of links to it on our homepage, links at the bottom of every page. In the archive, you're going to find past shows, about 250 of them now, that you can search by keyword or keyword phrase like trout, tarpon, Madison River, Euro-nymphing, whatever. Go ahead and explore, and I think you'd be pleasantly surprised at all the knowledge that we've collected over the past 10 years. So check it out. Our next broadcast will be on May 17th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'll interview Peter McLeod, and our topic for the show will be giant trevally on the fly. Peter is the first person to write a comprehensive guide on fly fishing for giant trevally, or GTs as they're called. And catching one of these fish is like the pinnacle of flats fishing. So join us as Peter leads us on a quest for this brutal apex predator. We'd like to thank the International Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Tarpon Key Lodge, Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.